Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. Join us each week as we delve into some of life's most complex questions. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear my voice, you are exactly where you need to be. I am your host, Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at HeyZRadio.com. I almost did it again, Cheryl.
You caught yourself, though. You caught yourself.
Yep. So, everybody, welcome. And sorry about the late start. We were having some technical difficulties. The gods of Skype were being evil gods rather than the beneficent gods that we all believe Skype to be. So we will not be taking a break tonight, but we're going to go straight to our guest. Tonight joining us is psychic medium William Becker, and you know, he's become quite the frequent flyer on the show, and it's always fun to have him. So, William, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here. I always have a good time.
Yeah, we really always like having you. It's just too bad Karen can't be here tonight. She's got, I guess, her sorority you know, sisters are in town or whatever, and so I'm sure that that's going to be like a huge party for them to do.
Yeah, she sent me a text earlier, so that's good. At least she's here in spirit.
Right. And I'm sure that her and her friends are actually listening right now, critiquing everything that I say. So.
Now the pressure is really on. Thanks a lot, Rick.
No, you're quite welcome. So, William.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming back. It's always a pleasure having you on. You're always a great guest. So, you know, let's get right down to it. You know, let's talk about the tours. You have the tours that you do, the Paranormal Hotspot classes and the tours that you do up in your area. So let's talk a little bit about that. First off, let's talk about the Paranormal Hotspots classes. What's that all about? That's fairly new.
Yeah. I do a regular monthly class, just a two-hour class in Oregon City, and then, you know, I'll take that one on the road. But what I do with the hotspots, it's Paranormal Insights Presents the Northwest Haunted Hotspots, is the long title. And I find a location that is noted for being haunted, mm-hmm. and preferably a place that people really like going to, you know, something with a bit of a draw and type of thing of if I could ever get there type of a place.
Right.
And set up the classes. We work, and it depends on the location, 2, 3, 4 hours with just practicing and working on psychic development. These are open for anybody from never done this before to I have professionals show up at the class. Mm-hmm. And then we conduct an investigation that's a psychic based investigation. We sure. use the psychic that comes through as the lead, and then the technical, the science, to help capture hard evidence of what we come up with the psychic.
Right.
And we also have the history and that kind of thing that we can verify with as well, but we don't get into that until after the investigation.
Okay. Now, you talk about developing psychic ability. I have always maintained that it's something that you're born with, and there may even be a biological component involved. But how do you mean by developing? Do you mean, like, one day you just wake up and it's like, oh, my God, I can talk to dead people? Or how do you mean?
I agree with you, Rick. I think it is a part of us that's probably very important to us in evolution. I think everybody is psychic. But we live in a world and in a culture, a society that squashes it. So often
yes.
little kids are able to see things and hear things and do things that the adults can't. And so what I do is I help guide people through a process that allows them to find their own psychic voice.
Okay.
My basic class is finding your psychic voice. Because everybody's different. We've all got different takes on the gifts. We've all got different expression. We all have different way of doing things. And I don't have a manual that says this is the right and wrong way to do everything. I help people find their own manual inside themselves.
Yeah, and I think that that's important too. You talk about the quenching of psychics in our society. And, you know, you and I, we've had conversations about this before. And I've had conversations about this with other psychics, but you know, how do you feel about that when you, when even you get like investigators that are like, wow, there's no such thing as talking to the dead. What are your feelings concerning this?
I've actually investigated with people like that a couple of times, and by the time they were done, they changed their opinion.
Right.
Which is part of the confirmation of myself saying, oh yeah, I guess I can do that. If this guy's convinced it can happen now, okay, it can happen. I understand part of the problem is there are so many frauds out there, and there have been throughout history.
Yes.
So much of the spiritualist movement was fraudulent. The Fox sisters, I still don't know if they were fake or not. They claim back and forth.
Right.
And one of the reasons I don't charge for talking to the dead type psychic readings, there are many reasons, but one of them is I never want it to look like, I never want to be associated with the fraudulent aspect of it. And I'm not saying other people who do charge are frauds, and I'm not saying that at all, but it's very important to me that one, money never becomes the driving force,
mm-hmm.
and two, that nobody can criticize me for any complicity in any kind of fraudulent activity or
sure.
scam or anything else. It's just, I'll charge for a past life reading, but not for talking to the dead, not if I'm lucky enough to be able to do a reading on a living person, any of that kind of stuff. I'll charge for classes that I feel legitimate about charging for.
Right. No, I really couldn't agree more. One of the psychic that I work with quite a bit, she goes back and forth with what it is that she charges for, and she's been in, you know, of course, been in my house a few times, and thanks to her, that's when, you know, Paul, my own personal ghost in the basement, likes to show up. Mm-hmm. By the way, according to Karen, he likes when I mention him. So, but she's been over
there. Raised a cheer.
Okay. Hi, Paul.
It's like a box in his hand, and yeah. Does he like beer?
Huh?
Does he like beer?
You know what? I honestly, I have no idea. I've only seen him twice.
Okay.
There's been a few times where it's like he. I can see a shadow right now up against the wall. But anyways, I've only seen him twice. He's kind of a youngish guy, maybe like early 30s, dark hair, mustache. But I've seen him twice, and you know, but whatever. My wife, honest, yeah, he's all right. I mean, he can be kind of a pain in the ass at times, though, because I'll be doing the show and I can feel him and sometimes see out of the corner of my eye him trying to get my attention, and I can't always give him my attention, but apparently he likes when I, you know, talk about him on air, and that's fine, because he's a cool cat, and I don't mind him so much. But, you know, with recently Sylvia Brown, who has always been a really high-profile spiritual medium, she's gotten herself in a little bit of trouble again. And, I have a theory concerning somebody like Sylvia Brown. I do believe that she was... at one time, or she is the real McCoy. I do believe that, but she seems to be having some problems lately with hitting things dead on. My theory is this. I think that age may play a factor in this, and do you think that with time and the older you get, maybe you have some kind of psychic Alzheimer's?
Oh, that's a question nobody's asked me before, and I hadn't thought about it. I hope not, because I'm getting late and really practicing a lot of this a little late in life. But one of the things, and actually this can go with it, a person who's psychic can get so jaded with what they do, and the ego can get into the way so much of needing to produce something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much out there sometimes that we can get confused. And if a psychic can't say sometimes, I don't know, or I'm not getting something, or it's not clear to me, I think if we're not careful, fame and fortune can taint us a little bit. And
you know what, William, I think
we're doing
right, but I think that goes with anybody. I mean, it's amazing how even with you know, some people that I've, you know, had the opportunity to talk to, and all of a sudden they're doing, you know, the entertainment side of things. And it's kind of amazing how quickly people get a big head over it.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's a fear I have. I mean, one of the things that has helped me a lot in my own process and proceeding with some of the goals and ideas and plans that I have is someone you and I both know, and I don't know if she wants me to tell her name, so I won't, told me that I can do this and be successful without losing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's a real fear. And I don't know Sylvia. I've never met her. I've never really worked or talked to her. And so I'm not going to speak exactly for her.
But sure.
What you say about the Alzheimer's piece can happen. Also, if our lives and are such that we're not able to tune into ourselves well, we're not going to tune into the other around us well either, in my opinion.
No, I completely agree with that. I mean, in order for you to know others, you need to know yourself. And it's something that can be very easily, a person can lose themselves. And like, you've seen it happen, I've seen it happen, and it's really sad, because what happens is that this stuff makes the rest of us look bad. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree very much.
Right. So let's talk about, you know, with more with the Paranormal Hotspots classes. Now, you say that you take people to locations and, let's name some of the locations that you've gone to. That's kind of like on the list.
Right. I've taken people to the Tokelin Hotel. I did that last year, and I'm going to do it again in September. We sold them out. And it's the first resort hotel in Washington. It's on the coast. It's an old, funky place. It's great, wonderful food. I love it. The Klondike in St. Helens. I'm going to have another class there in June. And the building's been a brothel. It's been, you name it, and Shanghai and the whole bit. We'll get to explore the whole building. It's been on Paranormal States. They did an investigation of the building once. And
right.
One of the things that was confirming to me is that my team investigated the building the night before their program aired, and I went and watched it over at the Klondike, of course, and so much of the research they'd done, so much of the psychic work they'd done, so much of what they presented were things that I either came up with or things that the teams had experiences with the equipment. I'm doing one on the 18th of this month at the Sumter B&B, as featured on the Ghost Mind program. Really wonderful people. I've talked to Brian, the owner's son, a lot, setting this up. And there, I want to take the classes on the road. I mean, my goal is to be able to take tours around the U.S. and Europe and hit a variety, like a regular tour bus tour, nobody better steal this idea from me now that I'm putting it out in the public sphere. Go to the haunted places, go to some of the castles, go to the houses, go to these ancient spots, and work on the abilities and then progressive class and progressive psychic investigations of these different spots. Right. I think it'd be fantastic.
No, I think it would be fantastic. Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, not at all.
Oh, right. Recently, though, it's like you've contacted a couple of the people that, you know, that I do business with or whatever.
Right.
And, these things, they seem to, it seems like they're going to pan out for you. But, yeah, I don't think you have any, I don't think you have to worry about anybody stealing your idea, because it's definitely a very unique idea. And, of course, I like the whole idea of doing the, you know, well, what they call scientific side of the paranormal with the psychic side. And it's that kind of thing has always kind of made me question a little bit. It always just seemed to me that psychic ability, PK, remote viewing, mediumship has been tested by, you know, not only our government, but also by some very well-respected universities. Would you say that it is possible that psychic ability is a little bit more scientific than waving an EMF detector in the air?
You know, I think in a lot of ways it is. An EMF detector is going to tell us that there's some kind of change in the electromagnetic field.
Sure.
It's not going to tell us where it's from. And the lack of fluctuation doesn't mean that there isn't an entity there.
Mm-hmm.
We have a theory that entities can interrupt or affect the electromagnetic field, but even different kinds of wavelengths, different machines. I've been on investigations where the K2 meter is going off like crazy and the EMF meter is sitting right next to it on zero.
Mm-hmm.
I can guess from just the science that it's a wavelength the only the K2 meter is picking up, and they're focusing on that to let us know they're here, but anything else, I don't know. If you get responses on a piece of machinery that is a direct reply to questioning, and you can say do this or do that, then there's a little bit more science to it, but the psychic really helps form those questions. Because we listen and we talk and we can have that conversation without fishing in the dark so much often. I mean, we're not always right. I make mistakes sometimes, and sometimes I just don't get it.
But. Well, you're only a human being. And that's the thing that always kind of killed me about this, that it seems that psychics are held to an extremely high standard, and man, once a medium or a clairvoyant or a transchanneler, man, once one makes a mistake, it's like people are just pouncing on that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't think it's fair.
No, it really isn't fair.
Mm-mm. And I think it goes back, once so many people think anything like this is superstitious, and crazy, mm-hmm. but also it goes back to that fear of frauds. I think that's a big piece of it.
No, I think so too, and it's sad that it has to be like that. It's like we've had people on the show that were like, somehow, some way, Karen and I got them to admit that they were, you know, that they had a psychic ability, and it was almost as if we were like trying to pull them out of this, you know, psychic closet, so to mm-hmm. speak, and it's like, why can't you just be honest? Who cares what the television show says? Who cares what your teammate says? If you have these abilities, be proud of it and mm-hmm. use them.
I agree. So many people, though, have other parts of life that it could get in the way. I've done a lot of work in technical areas, not electronic technical, but anywhere from writing 501c3s to advising clients or different kinds of things. Whole different area, whole different world.
Sure.
They probably not would probably not respond well to a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them. Some would, but a lot of them wouldn't. I'm putting all my energy now into making the paranormal insights, my psychic work, grow and make that the profession now, so it's not as important as it was a couple years ago, but I understand the fear. I know people who have been laughed at and had issues, and it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, we've actually had people on the show that are, you know, and I think Cheryl can back this up, that have been like, well, you know, it's not real, it's fake, and I have no problem saying to people, oh, did you come by that through years of diligent research and field study? Or, and it's funny too, because they'll be like, it's either an extremely awkward no, or a couple days later I get an email or a Facebook message that is an emphatic F you.
Right.
it happens, unfortunately. But I think it's just kind of like this whole sphere of what it is that we have to, you know, deal with in the paranormal. It's like, you know, anybody could say that they're a psychic, just like anybody could say that they're a ghost hunter and be completely fraudulent, and they're probably not. And I tell people, too, that it's like, well, there's also fraudulent TV repairmen. I mean, I can, you know, open up my television right now, which I wouldn't want to do because I totally, we got an awesome TV. But,
I'm enjoying you as a living person, and I'm not really ready to communicate with you as a dead person right now. So, you know, I don't know how good you are with the electronics, so maybe that's an unfair comment. But
no, it's not an unfair comment because I'm sure that I will either kill myself or somehow be responsible for the, you know, future zombie apocalypse. But by messing around with stuff. So, you know, speaking of TV, mm-hmm. I understand that recently you have been contacted by some Lord High Muckety Mucks and upper echelon types. What's going on with that?
We had a contact from a production a company in LA, and they're big. I've gone online and checked out their websites and everything, and I'm going to sound totally ignorant, but I cannot tell you off the top of my head which shows they've invented and sold and all this kind of stuff, but they were, a lot of them I recognize, and I don't watch that much TV, so.
No, neither do I.
They've got to be doing something. And they were interested in us because of the paranormal history and the history combination that we do with our ghost tours. And so they sent us a camera, and we're going to be doing some filming this weekend, basically to see how we interact. We've got a couple team members that are going to be part of the time. They gave us a list of kind of what they want to look at and look for and see what happens. It's exciting. It's, if nothing else, the fact that we're making enough progress with the ghost tours that people are finding us on Google and finding this kind of an interest says a lot for me. And it's something I'm very, very humbled by and proud of at the same time. And I don't need to be a rich and famous TV star, but it's maybe a good way to help get our point of view out there and how we work with things and promote and build up the classes and the tours and that kind of thing as well.
Right. Can you tell me or tell our listeners, well, as me as well, what the production company is, who they are?
LMNOTV.
LMNOTV. Never heard of them, but I'm definitely going to look them up.
Yeah, and the person that works with us has helped with show production, and she's also the talent scout.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah, I'd be very interested in your take on this. I'm always cautious. There are a lot of scams out in that line of work as well, but it seems legit, and I'm not going to put any stock in that by this time next year we'll have our own TV show, but it's an honor and it's fun to get this far and get a little recognition.
Yeah, definitely. And also too, I think, you know, working with somebody such as yourself, it's going to give a little bit more credence to, you know, where it is that where, you know, where we came from. I mean, let's face it, an investigation prior to 2000, maybe even 1999, the formula was investigator, psychic medium. And right. That's the way that Dr. Hans Holzer had said. I mean, personally, with myself, I will not conduct an I wouldn't even dream of conducting an investigation without having the impressions of a medium. I think that's important. But we also talked about this too. That it's like it's not so much as a it's not really so much used as evidence, but as a way to proceed.
Right. Exactly. And sometimes, I mean, if what you come up with can be backed by historical documentation, that can help put the pieces together with something more concrete, because that gives you another piece to it. The only way I know I'm right is if there's something that can back up what I'm claiming. Right. But absolutely, it's not hard evidence, but I'm skeptical of hard evidence sometimes because I don't know what it necessarily all means. A good photo, a good EVP, a lot of the time that's pretty clear, but meters going off and lights going off and things like that, it's not definitive enough for me. It's not proof.
Right.
It's proof that there's something going on, but it's not proof of what's going on.
Right. You know, I remember when I used to work with a much larger group, we were at an investigation. Now, there was stuff that was going on in this house. Okay, there was, I mean, I saw some things, saw a light show, saw, you know, some stuff that I've, it's weird, in 20 plus years of investigating, I can honestly say I've never seen that before. But, yeah, and I had a K2 meter in my hand, and it's actually kind of a funny story. And we were in the room that was the most effective, and it was the little girl's room. And the K2 meter kept going off while I'm holding it. And it's like, wow, you know, I'm communicating with something here. And I took my phone out of my pocket, and my wife had texted me 5 times. And guess how many times that those that K2 meter was going off? 5 times. Yep. And I think that anything that has batteries, anything that goes bleep, anything that has really cool lights that light up, you can't really trust it completely because anything can affect it.
Exactly.
Right.
And I've talked to some people, we had people at our ghost conference and conferences I've gone to that have talked about equipment and the shortcomings of it too, and how, you know, just how reliable is it really? When my skin's crawling, there's something going on too.
And it's, yeah,
it's free. It's right there. I don't need to buy batteries even.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's even things that you can use that you don't need batteries. Like, you know, I get a lot of people who ask me, because I use the term old school a lot. I'm very much an old school investigator and researcher. And I love old school techniques. I love the bell, using, like, you know, a bellhop bell. You know, hey, if you're around, tap it. Uh-huh. Baby powder on the floor.
Right.
Strings hanging from the ceiling, waiting, you know, and sealing off windows and seeing if something's going to pass through those strings.
Uh-huh.
Using a bowl of water with a needle attached to it, or rather a bowl of water with a needle attached to a cork and communicating in that fashion.
Right.
Do you think that these old school techniques are more reliable than what we know today?
Actually, I think a lot of them could be, because they can be affected by a broader range. If you've got an EMF meter out there, it's going to be measuring X range of energy.
Sure.
And that's it. And again, it's not going to be saying that there isn't a lightning spike coming through someplace or whatever. When you have something moving, something floating in a bowl of water, and it's quite deliberate, that's not a power surge. That's not something that could be quite natural. That's also, you would tell if it's vibrations because of a minor earthquake or the building shaking, there'd be ripples in the water that you would see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, whatever it is that's doing this, doesn't have, you know, it doesn't have to conform to a certain energy range. It can fit any energy range. Just the same kind of thing with photography and so many different things. A film camera gets a wider spectrum of light than a digital camera does, and
sure.
Fewer fake orbs, things like that. And I'm not, the new, latest and greatest toys can be fun and they can have a lot to them, but I'm not convinced that they're better.
No. See, I would have to agree. You know, it's funny that you use the term energy, and we always talk about, you know, the EMFs and all that. I was, a couple months back, I was watching a television show that is gaining some popularity, but it's also extremely controversial, and I don't want to name it on air. And their researcher was talking about, he actually accepted the idea that it was electromagnetic fields that was causing all the activity in this home. Not that it was fueling any kind of paranormal activity, but it was causing people to hear things and see things. And I'm willing to accept that as a possibility, but when you get an EVP that answers a question clearly, I don't think that electromagnetic fields have quite gained sentience yet.
I don't either.
To do that kind of thing. I'm sitting there and I'm like, dude, what are you talking about?
Exactly. And it could be a high electromagnetic field can give an entity a little more energy to make that EVP more clear, but that's not caused by the EMF or by the electromagnetic field.
See, yeah. And I think right, and I like that. I like the fact that you bring that up because it has become like an accepted thing in the field right now that high EMFs can cause a person to hallucinate and have headaches and hear things, see things, whatever, just massive hallucinations. Now, I've actually talked to electricians on the subject, and they're like, oh yeah, it can do that if you're underneath high tension wires that you're living underneath 24/7, 365 days a year, and they're unshielded, and it's directly over your home within 5 feet of directly being over your ceiling, that, yeah, you're going to feel that thing. But living in a home with an unshielded power outlet is not going to cause you to see things. However, at the same time, I do believe that these high EMFs can fuel paranormal activity. If you got something in the house, it's just looking for energy to be able to manifest.
Right. And especially if you have an entity that wants to be known. Some of them like the high. No, I agree with you completely. One of my frustrations with this whole theory about the high EMFs creating the symptoms is that nobody's ever told me how high it has to be, for how long of a period of exposure, and do the meters even read this high? I've asked the question and I've never gotten an answer. Mm-hmm. Your definition makes sense. When I grew up, there was a house, half a mile maybe away, that was built underneath the power lines, the high transmission power lines. And this was, this house was probably built in the 60s. So technology wasn't as good probably then as it is now for this kind of thing.
Sure.
And I didn't know the people that lived there, but the house was never for sale. I never knew of any problems. I knew people that lived close by. The ambulance was never there. Nobody got carted away for being insane because of all this. It might have affected their TV antenna a little bit on occasion, but that seemed to be about it.
Sure.
You'd think that would be, if anything was going to cause it, you'd think that would.
Right. You know, Elaine has, Elaine from the chat room, Elaine Davidson, she's the one that sent us a plethora of questions that actually I'm going to get to her questions because they're great questions for the second segment. But she asked this question: does William think a psychic can project their own EVP? That's a great question.
Their own EVP?
Yeah.
Oh. That is a great question. Leave it to Elaine.
Yeah,
And I'm not changing the subject to delay or anything else, but Elaine is somebody I've worked with quite a bit, and I have just been thrilled to see her glow and blossom and come into her own. And I'm not saying that it's because of me, but it's just her confidence in what she can do and the things she's been doing. It's been exciting. And this, as a teacher, this is the kind of stuff I love to see. She can do stuff I can't do. And I love it. I think that if we're powerful enough, I know people who have been able to be seen in the locations they've gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way I travel, basically.
Astral projection, correct?
Right. I usually bring something more to me and look, and I haven't tried to interact in such a way. I'll interact with the paranormal entity, said, but I haven't done it in such a way that would pick up. I think it's possible. I will say I think it's possible.
Right.
I don't have practical experience saying yes, but
okay,
it's possible.
No, it's fair enough. It's funny, too, because when you think about it, EVP has, it's been around since about the 50s, but it's really blossomed into its own within the last 10 or 12 years. I remember back in the day when we still called them rotted voices, but, that's me. Now, with EVPs, we don't really understand how does a spirit do... How does something without lungs, a voice box, basically breathing, how are these things able to produce voices?
I don't know. And it's a really good question, and it's something that happens. I have entities talk to me all the time, and sometimes I actually hear it with my physical ear, and it's that question. How are they, what are they manipulating? Sound is a form of energy, and maybe they're able to manipulate sound waves or energy waves.
Yeah.
Either telepathically or some other way, but that's pure speculation.
No, that is speculation, but that has also been one of the accepted theories concerning EVPs. One thing that I've noticed with a lot of EVPs that I've collected in the past, that it's like these voices come in just under the underneath the human voice speaking. And one of the accepted theories concerning EVPs has been that this is somehow a telepathic communication.
Okay. Yeah. And I could see that, but again, one of the frustrations about this field is we can't prove anything.
I'm so glad that you say that, because I've said that to people, that it's hard to prove anything when you have a field that is so highly subjective. You can get all the objective evidence that you want or that you think you get, but in the end, this is still incredibly subjective.
Exactly. And part of the joy of it, in a sense, is too, I guess, people can't really ever prove you totally wrong in some situations, but it is frustrating, because I don't even know, even with what I pick up and what I read and the places I go, I can tell you what I see and what it feels like and what I experience and what they tell me, but I can't tell you for sure that it's not part of some larger universal energy flow that just is picking up out there. I can't guarantee or explain it necessarily, because there's so much we don't know about. I don't believe in trapped souls, for example. I believe in a lot of energy lay down and visiting souls and other kind of entities. But prove any of it, I can't. I just can't.
Well, it's interesting that you say that too, because you talk. I love the theories that have been pretty much accepted theories for 130 plus years of psychical research and inquiry, and with the dead, it's always like, well, this is why this person stays around. I can accept some of these, but the one that I cannot accept, and I'm sure that you could, as a person who speaks to the dead, can, shed some light on this. I don't believe for a second that this person doesn't know they're dead.
I don't either. I haven't had any experience. I can't count how many different entities I've talked to. Now, some of the entities I talked to, and this is going out on one of those limbs, and people may say I'm crazy, but that's okay. Some of them aren't from human beings. Some of them are crossover, maybe from other parallel universes, or some of the things that go along with quantum mechanics and string theory. I'm not going to say exactly, but I've had enough experience now that I know there's something else out there. Some people call them elementals. I don't know. But those are different. Otherwise, no. People know. If it has soul to it, especially, they know. And and a lot of what's out there is a piece of a person's consciousness, a piece of their personality. It can be intelligent, it can interact with us, but that's part of why I don't believe in trapped souls. Mostly, they aren't complex enough to be a soul.
Yeah.
And it's like laying down energy that we do in any kind of a spot, and it's part of it stays there, I think.
Right. No, I couldn't agree more. And it's funny too, because it's like when I tell people, it's like, you're dead, wow, bummer, you no longer live in your body. But the reason that I can't believe that is it's a common sense sort of thing. You're in a spot, like I have my spirit, Paul. I mean, he's very much aware of the three of us. We're very much aware of him. You cannot.
He has a great time with you guys, and he likes to tease you.
Yeah, I know he does. He likes messing around. It's weird because he likes watching me when I work out in the basement. But that's fine, whatever. But I can't. Okay, you're, like I said, you're dead, bummer. You're in this place. Your spirit's there for a few hundred years. You're constantly seeing people come and go, come and go. Hairstyle changes, clothes changes. You're constantly screaming in people's ear, "Hey, talk to me." How can you not know that you're not dead? I mean, that just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
And anything that would just be a little piece of a movie clip type of a thing that's still there in pure energy, not part of a soul. I mean, I agree. I completely agree. It doesn't make any sense.
Right. And I think that the question, I'm still even just going to ask it because I like, you know, I love our listeners' questions. Frank in the chat room says, what does William mean that he does not believe in trapped souls? Now that's like something to the effect of like we were just talking about. It's like, oh my God, you know, I'm here, bummer, I'm dead. But, you know, the whole idea of trapped souls, that's been something that's always commonly been, you know, it was a common theory in paranormal research and investigation. Okay, when you say that you don't believe in trapped souls, why are they here?
Okay, first of all, and again, this is all theory, and my theory is based on my experience and research I've done, and trying to get rid of the overlays of religion. A lot of what we look at in the paranormal is influenced by religious teaching or philosophy, even by people who don't consider themselves religious.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just one of the built-in prejudices that we need to look at. And I don't use prejudice in a derogatory form or word, but just as a natural piece. It's something that influences our perception.
Sure.
And my experience mostly is that the beings that I've come across aren't complex enough or complete enough to be a soul. They're not the complete person. It's more like a two-dimensional being instead of a three-dimensional being.
Sure.
And the three-dimensional ones that I've come to, the beings, you know, my grandma comes and visits a lot. That's great. Well, she comes and visits. She's not trapped here. Mm-hmm. She comes and visits. I think that there can be entities that are complete souls that stay in a place because they like it or they're watching something. But I honestly think that they know what they can do. And anything that's here for a while, I mean, who am I to tell it what its mission in the afterlife is? I don't know. Who knows what they're working on as far as if there is a soul that's here a longer term as a complete piece, and I haven't come across one yet. Excuse me, my tongue gets stuck. But granting that it's certainly a possibility, I'm not arrogant enough to feel like I can tell them what they need to do. I just don't have that. I don't know if that answers his question or not.
But you know what? And actually, that kind of answers a question of mine too. I've actually gone on a number of investigations where the entity in the home committed suicide or some other, you know, unspeakable act that they felt was a sin. And the reason they don't want to leave is because they're afraid they're going to go to hell.
Right.
Have you ever had to convince an entity that, you know, it's not exactly what we has been fed to us over the years? I personally don't believe in hell, but that's my own personal belief. How do you convince somebody that it's like, hey man, you're going to pass on to someplace other than that? Have you ever had to do that, and how do you do it?
I haven't ever had to do that. It's never come up. I have had to work with entities sometimes that have been controlled by a darker entity.
Yes.
Says, hey, you know, you guys are dead. He can't do anything to you anymore. You're used to being obedient and following this pattern because of life. Well, you don't have to do that now. And they say, oh, wow, cool. And I did this once with what would be called a psychic vampire, and he just sort of disintegrated into dust because the woman and child that he was manipulating to get people in to take energy from just said, forget it, you know, screw you, basically. And they went on and did whatever else they were doing. It's not that they necessarily went away, but that it wasn't stuck. They didn't go to the light or go to or whatever. Sure. They just acknowledged that this being no longer had a hold on them. And I guess that's what you could do. Now, I know people that work with these beings. I don't want to be, or with people that, or entities they say need saving and whatever. I don't want to be disrespectful for anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about my experience and research. And if you read two different books, one book is going to tell you, and I've done this in the course of a couple of days of each other, that somebody who kills themselves because of the waste of the gift of life is all this misery and this trapped and all this. And another book says that the person who kills themselves is free and happy and joyous, and it was a chosen thing to do, and they're very comfortable in the next life, and there's absolutely no punishment. Right. And you know, again, how do we know for sure? I've talked to West Suicide on in one of the areas we go to, and it's just the part of his personality that's left there that was always trying to make it with women, and he's just kind of a flirt with some of the women.
Yeah,
and that's it. That's the only part of him that's there. He's not stuck. He's off. Frankly, he's off having a good time, most of them.
So, do you think that it's ethical to walk into a place and say, you need to go now? Do you think that that's ethical to forcibly cross spirits over?
It is not for me.
Okay.
I know this. The answer you're looking for would be more black and white than that. And I say it just out of respect for other people who firmly believe that it is ethical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the type of, it's not the team I would want to work with. It doesn't mean I don't value the people and where they're coming from. They have a different understanding and a different take on things, and frankly, I think often it's shaped by religion. But it wouldn't be ethical for me to do, because it's, and frankly, I've never heard of a case where it's really worked that well.
Yeah.
And another thing too, I mean, just cleansings in general, if you're not really careful, you're going to create all kinds of problems.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's funny that you say that too, because, I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit before we go on break, but I recently worked with Chuck Gotsky and In the Dark Investigations, and he sent me an email. A woman, a potential client, had said she doesn't want an investigation, she just wants a house cleansing. And I told him, I'm like, dude, don't do that kind of thing if you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
And he asked me if I know anybody, and it's like, currently right now I really don't have access to a house cleaner, more or less. What would your advice to Chuck, who's a great friend of the show and a listener, and is a super great guy, and I love his team. What would you say to something like that? It's like, I need to, this person wants in cleansing. What do you think? William, you're breaking up really bad.
Hello?
You there? Okay, yep, I'm here. Yep, okay. You're breaking up really bad.
Okay, sorry, I'm sitting a little close to the mic. So, I would tell them, if this is something I'm comfortable with, then it's not.
You know, hey, William, I'm gonna have to stop you right there, because you're breaking up really bad. You know what? Let's here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, hopefully we'll be able to find out what the problem is, and you'll be able to answer that question, because I'm sure it's probably a very good one. So, everybody, you're listening to William Becker, Psychic Medium, on Paranormal Underground at hazyradio.com. We're gonna take a quick break so we can pay some bills, and just hang out, because we're having a good time.
Great, thanks.
Cheryl, take it away.
Hi, it's Cheryl Knight, editor for Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher. Every month, Paranormal Underground magazine explores the unexplained by examining topics that range from haunted sites to ufology to cryptozoology. We also spotlight investigators and researchers who continue to pave the way in a field that seeks to answer some of life's most complex questions.
If you want to read about topics like psychic phenomena, demonology, conspiracy theories, crystals and herbology, and much, much more, visit ParanormalUnderground.net and start exploring the unexplained today. Visit us today at ParanormalUnderground.net and get a 12-month digital subscription for 15% off the cover price.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hey everyone, it's Karen Frazier. I'm here with my co-host of Paranormal Underground Radio, Rick Hale.
Hi everyone.
We invite you to join Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network to explore the unexplained every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific and other times in the flyover states.
Each week we talk with investigators in the field, researchers, authors, and experts about topics that include paranormal investigation, ufology, cryptozoology, and spirituality.
So please join us each Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern for Paranormal Talk with great guests right here on HazyRadioNetwork.com. Hey, this is Karen Frazier, writer and radio host with Paranormal Underground. Since I wrote my book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, in 2010, people have asked me what happened next. In my new book, Dancing with the Afterlife, a paranormal memoir, my Wellington story continues. Dancing with the Afterlife is more than the continuation of the Wellington story, however. It's also the story of a lifetime of afterlife research and paranormal encounters. What I've learned has changed my life, and it might change yours as well. To learn more about Dancing with the Afterlife or to read an excerpt from the book, visit dancingwiththeafterlife.com. Thank you.
Hi, this is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Hazy Radio Network, its affiliates, or sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at hazyradio.com. For the last hour or so, we have been speaking, having a fascinating conversation, in fact, with psychic medium William Becker, who is a frequent flyer on the show. First, before we, before we go back to the interview, I just want to say we have some folks here that are listening international, Australia, Canada. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. I hope that you are enjoying what you are hearing, because that's what we're all about here, because we do love our listeners. So, William, welcome back. Thank you for sticking around for a second segment.
Oh, thank you.
Now, we were having, some technical difficulties, which is, something we have quite a bit on this show. We're like the destination, truth of paranormal radio. But we were talking about house cleansings.
Right.
Yeah, because I got contacted by Chuck Gotsky, who's a good friend of the show, and he's been on the show, and he's a really great guy, and his team's great. Was contacted by a homeowner that she doesn't want any kind of investigation. She just wants these entities gone.
Right.
How do you feel about, something like that? Just get the hell out of here. How do you feel about that?
I have a problem with it. First of all, those entities were there first.
Yes.
And it's their space. And without talking to them and finding out who they are and what they want, and whether or not you can come up with a good living situation, I've done investigations when people wanted everything gone. But once they were able to find out through us and through what the entities told me what was really going on, it's like, oh, no, this is cool. Hang out.
Yeah.
It's you're welcome. And I think communication with the living is a key, communication with the dead is a key. And just to go in and say, okay, I'm here now, you leave, forget it. It's like, to me, it's like the people that buy a house three blocks from the race car track that's been there for 50 years and then want the track closed down. It's like, no, if you don't want to live next to a race car track, don't buy the house.
Right.
I don't know. I understand the way people work, but also, I haven't come across anything that's pure evil. I haven't come across anything I'd ever call demonic. In my experience, they don't exist. And if that's the case, most of the time you can build some kind of a working relationship with the being. Not always. Some of them are just nasty, but
right.
You got to at least try all of that kind of thing first. And then, like we said, cleansing a house can be very dangerous.
Yeah. No, it can be very dangerous. And that's what I told him too. I said, you could have something that attaches itself to you, mm-hmm. and come into your home and cause all sorts of problems. Now, it's been my experience that, I'm with you on, the demon thing, the fallen angel thing.
Right.
It's very difficult for me because in my experience, it doesn't happen, but I think we have television shows to thank for all of this. You get people who are like, I want this entity out of my home. And it's not something that's demonic. It's just some like grumpy old dude who died suddenly and doesn't want you, hanging out in his space.
Right.
Yeah. And you come across that quite a bit, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And usually when you can talk to them and work things out a little bit, they're cool. Now, with the tours, Oregon City, which is where I do the ghost tours and I spend a lot of time, is very haunted. In the last month or so, I've seen two or three full-bodied apparitions in the middle of the afternoon while I've been walking down the street. Mm-hmm. It's just the way the town is. And there's one guy that I first noticed at an old steamboat dock area that's on part of our ghost tours. And this guy was somebody who killed people. He was an enforcer. He had a nice knife. He was not somebody you'd want to hang out with in real life.
Right.
He and I get along great. He can't hurt me. I have no desire to hurt him. I don't judge him. We banter. We joke. We have a good time. And it's, again, it's not all of who he is. It's just a piece of who he is that's there. And I run into him all over town.
Right, hold on a second. Let me ask you this. Does he just like sort of come up to you and like, hey, William, what's going on?
Sometimes.
I think that's fascinating. And it's like you have that kind of relationship with somebody who's dead. I think that's amazing.
It's great. I really like it. And actually, a lot of times with some of... Often, anyway, the relationships with the dead can be a little bit more reliable. They've got fewer agendas, and they don't have sick kids or a spouse that's going to be calling or something else. And, you know, you usually know more what the flow of the relationship's going to be. Mm-hmm. And it can be very flattering and a few things like that, too. It's just... And I like it. He probably would have killed me if I would have lived at his time, but I don't, so we can be friends. And he doesn't bother anybody. And I've run into that in other places too. And, you know, sometimes you're not going to get somebody to really settle down, but
right.
I think most of the time you can.
Yeah. Well, I know, like we were talking a little bit off air, in my time doing this, I have come across two entities that I would say were not human in origin, as if they never walked this world breathing. I believe the first one that I dealt with was a thought form placed on a person as a curse. Right. And the second one was somebody had called up this elemental spirit. Now, it wasn't evil in the sense like, you know, running around in red jammies and a pitchfork and horns and all that, but rather was something a little bit more along the lines of an amoral being. Like it's like, you called me up, what do you want? And until you tell me what it is that you want, I'm going to raise some hell in your house.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And again, that doesn't... To me, a demon has to be pure evil. There's nothing right. but evil.
Right.
And I haven't seen it. Now, and the being like you're talking about would not be somebody I'd want running around. But you've got the point. What is it you want? You called me. What do you want?
So right.
Communicate. I think... I'm sorry if the tongue gets tied a little bit.
There's
a park in Oregon City that I like to go hang out, partly because it's another place you can see beings in the middle of the daytime. But also, I've had some pretty interesting experiences there, and I've taught classes there that have opened a lot of people's eyes. And it's one of the places where I've very clearly seen somebody you could call in an elemental. I think it was like a dwarf. The look is how I would describe him. Mm-hmm. Very nice. And I go there. There's a tree that's got a great root that's just the right size and shape for me to sit on as a bench. And I'll go there and listen and talk. And this park, I think, used to be owned by one of the ministers. And what they were telling me there is so often there's been this battle for millennia between the people and the entities and different religions calling whatever beings are there bad and mm-hmm. making war on them, and often making war on them not just spiritually but even physically by trying to take over and kick them out. And so often that's tainting, and that's why so often they're called evil. And so yeah. often that when they are acting in a nasty way, it's either because they've been conditioned to do that because that's how they've been treated for so long and they're standing up for themselves, or sure. it's in a direct response to something. I'm not going to say that's every case, but it was something of a real awakening to me to listen to them, and it made sense.
Right.
It made a lot of sense.
You know, I grew up in an Irish American family, and you never talked about the gentry, and you know who I mean by the gentry, correct? The Fae.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Right.
You never talked about them because they'll mess you up. But right. you know, it's like even my grandfather got his clothes stolen by a leprechaun when he was a little boy. That's what he claims. I swear to God, that's right. what he claims. But these beings, they do. It does seem that they were once in charge, but they have been relegated to this kind of like you know, you're an evil little imp thing flying around causing all sorts of problems. And yeah, I can definitely see that, because I do believe that was what I had dealt with that second time around. You know, for the last half hour or so, I really do want to touch on some of Elaine Davidson's questions, because I think they're really great questions. So we're going to turn this from a conversation. We're going to switch gears a little bit and turn this more into a question and answer kind of thing. Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with it, but I'm scared. Elaine's wonderful. She's a good friend, and she asks some very poignant and hard-hitting questions. So.
No, and they are. I mean, I had a chance to go over them before before I came on, and they're really great questions. Okay, we have questions, William, and you will answer them. What do you recommend?
Perfect accent with a name like Becker, my last
name. Oh yeah. Hey, Becker. What do you recommend for people that fall out of the psychic closet and become clairaudient overnight?
Give themselves a really big hug.
Okay.
And I can see Elaine laughing right now. Mm-hmm. But I say that because it's got to be something that's a shock when it happens just so fast.
Sure.
First of all, realize you're not going crazy. Second of all, find somebody you can talk to who understands and can work with you a little bit. And be careful who you tell. It is, if your livelihood is built around something other than paranormal, be careful what you talk about to who, and depending on where you live, you don't want the pitchforks and torches coming to the house. in the right spot, it can still happen.
I think
those would be my basic advice.
Okay. Yeah, I think Elaine was one of the ones that we actually dragged it out of her, sort of, and it almost seemed like on the show that it was kicking and screaming that she was like, she didn't want to admit to it, but then it was like, yeah, you know, I have these abilities, so it's like,
yep.
Kudos to her, and you know, I'm glad that, you know, you can live comfortably with yourself. Okay, do you believe that people's gifts, curses, can constantly evolve? Let's say go from clairaudient to empathic, then to astral travel.
Absolutely. I've experienced it myself. The more we open up to ourselves and allow ourselves to be completely ourselves, the more things are available. And just because we can do something now also doesn't mean that we can do it 10 years from now. And it's, you were talking about Sylvia but the earlier, and it's just kind of another example. But one of the wise teachers I've read about with meditation practice and some forms of Buddhism would say, you're going to get so many of these gifts here and there, and it's going to be a real temptation to hang on. You never want to hang on, because that stops growth.
Right.
You want to keep evolving and growing. And if some things stay with you forever, wonderful. And if some things pass out of your life at some point, that's okay too.
Yeah. Well, I know that in certain schools of Buddhism, the one that I personally adhere to, that it seems that the psychic abilities can be developed through meditation and through enlightenment, but it's really not seen as something that you want. It just sort of happens, and it stays for a little while, and then it goes away.
Right.
So yeah, I can definitely see that. Now this is a long one, and there's actually kind of two parts of it.
Okay.
So William, what do you think about an empathic person with some psychic abilities all of a sudden having strange dreams? In these dreams, they go places and they walk around, and at sunrise, wherever they are at in their dreams, someone note to them tells them to go home. Oh, I know what this is about, Elaine. Then they find out the places that they have passed by, visit, or stand in front of only in their dream may exist. Why would they go to places they haven't been? And B, any idea how to stop this? And I will tell you what this is about, because it actually concerns me.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, a question, why would they go to places that they've never been?
are they places that... Oh, wait a minute.
Okay.
I was going to ask you... No, I'm just thinking. I was going to ask you if there are places that you would like to have been. I think there are places that call you. There was something there calling.
Okay. B, and...
Sense?
No, that makes perfect sense. And B, and then I'll get to you what, you know, where this and how this involves me. Do you have any idea how to stop this?
You don't necessarily want to stop it. You want to control it. Because what I think you're doing is you're astro projecting in your sleep, and it's in control of you and not you in control of it.
Okay.
And that's not always a good thing, because you can get lost and caught up. And so basically, a few things you can do. I'm thinking out loud now. So
that's quite
things
right.
To try. Put up a shield around you that doesn't let you out.
Yeah.
Instead of shielding other things from coming in, seal yourself in.
And how do you do that? Is that some kind of psychic defense that just comes naturally, or is it something that you have to learn?
You have to learn to allow it to happen. The way I teach people in my class is I tell them to imagine whatever material first comes to mind, whatever it looks like, feels like, your first instinct is probably the one that's right, because it's probably your manual telling you what you need in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, there's a piece kind of around the heart chakra that is like going into another dimension. It's this huge universe inside my own body.
Okay.
And I try to imagine the shield coming from there and pushing out. And it has to go in all directions, because paranormal isn't just in front or behind or beside. It's up and down and everything else. And I push from there, partly because the energy, I think, is a little more true, but also because it pushes, if anything's actually come in or gotten too close, it can push it away.
Right.
And so in this case, you can imagine yourself, this shield keeping you in, so, you know, make it soft so you don't bruise yourself when you hit it, if you're floating.
Yeah.
Also, there's a tether we have, and it's attached to us. Mine's kind of at the base of my spine. They can be in other places. Yours might actually up even be between the shoulder blades. I'm not going to swear to that, but I'm getting that sense.
Okay.
And you may shorten that when you go to sleep and say, hey, you know, keep me in bed.
Yeah.
And just set that up. And then if you awaken during some of these, bring yourself back. Remind yourself. Do a ground and centering exercise before you go to sleep, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That can help just keep you together that way. And with people I know that have a lot of beings bombarding them all the time, and too much, I say, well, tell them not now, not while I'm sleeping or not whatever. We'll set up an appointment. And then you have to honor it, you know, and say, I want to go where I'm being called, but not now. I want to do this in a timeline that works better for me, in a way that works better for me.
Sure.
And if you can put that word out there, and then, you know, you and I can talk even just on the phone or something and see if we can work with that a little bit as far as tweaking it into a way where you can do that in a way that's comfortable for you. But if you try to just stop it, it's only going to press harder and get worse.
Okay.
In my experience.
Okay. So, all right, this is, I got this, I work at night, and I got this, I think it was 11:06 p.m., shortly after I'd started. And this completely blew my mind. And this is what this is in reference to. So I'm just going to read it directly from my Facebook. Elaine says, Rick, I had the oddest dream. You were in it with your wife and son. I was standing in front of a place called the Whistle Stop Cafe waiting for a friend when you walked up. You said, you don't belong here. Go home. Then I woke up, and she says, I have no clue where I was in the dream, but it sure seemed real until I woke. Now, here's what completely blew my mind. On my Facebook page, and you know, I'm originally from Chicago, but mm-hmm. we live about 30 or 40 miles north of the city proper. One of the towns that's nearby us is Fox Lake, Illinois. And in Fox Lake, Illinois is a place called the Whistle Stop Cafe.
Okay,
so there is Elaine, of course, who lives up by you, up in the Pacific Northwest, you know, 1,700 miles away or whatever, mm-hmm. could not possibly have known
that
I live near a place called the Whistle Stop Cafe. It's just not possible. Would you say that is kind of an astral travel? And if I'm telling her to go home, why am I telling her to go home? And I should just be letting her stay there because, you know, if you ever come to the Whistle Stop Cafe, the French toast is outstanding.
Well, it's kind of hard to eat that in an astral form for me, so it would have been a waste of the order.
Right.
What I see is happening, and I thought Elaine was the one traveling. That's why I was surprised when you said it concerned you. She gets called places. She listens, she hears things, she listens. She's opened up so much, and entities know it. When you can hear them and see them, they get it, and they call, and they want attention sometimes, for whatever reason. And I think what happened is she got pulled there by what was there, and you guys have worked a lot on the show and different things, and in fact, she was just on the show, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was talking about her her safety stuff for paranormal teams, and she gets a lot of
with that.
Yeah, but she gets a lot of flack from it too, and I think these people just they need to shut the hell up and leave her alone because she's doing a good thing. But that's my opinion, and not so much the opinion of Paranormal Underground. So please don't sue us. Okay, proceed.
Right. I understand and I concur. Now, when this happened, how close to the show was it?
When this
event?
I'm sorry. What again?
When she had this experience where she flew to Whistle Stop and you came and told her to go home, how close was that to her being on the show?
Actually, that was just, let me see, I think that was May 2nd when she sent that. So, sure, what was the last time Elaine was on the show?
I think it was a couple months ago, but I'm not quite sure. I can look it up real quick.
Okay.
If you'd like
no, that's
me to.
It wasn't within a few days of that of the event.
No, okay. It's been been at least a couple months.
Okay, because I was thinking there may have been, you know, she's been doing so much work and you build up a rapport with people and such like that, there can be a connection and you may have just noticed her. Or, Elaine, this isn't a criticism at all, but it's part of learning how to control our energies. It could just be that her energy field was so far out there with this that you two were able to connect and you were drawn over there and said, hey, go home, you shouldn't be here, because she probably shouldn't have been at that point because she needed to be sleeping and not traveling when she's not aware that she's traveling.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, that makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, a lot of people, you know, well, for example, with astral travel, I have always been, or even spirits, I always been a big believer that spirits and astral travel and, you know, that you move with the speed of thought.
Exactly.
And if you're thinking it and you have this ability to be able to do this, bam, you're going to be in Fox Lake, Illinois, standing in front of the Whistle Stop talking to me, the missus, and the kids. So,
exactly.
That definitely does make a whole lot of sense. Okay, another question from Elaine. Like I said, they're great questions, and I think it's funny that she actually put that whole incident in a question because it answered her question and it definitely answered my question as well.
Elaine's one of those people that I'm so very pleased to have come in contact with in that part of my life. She's awesome.
Yeah, she's really cool. When you go out to investigate a location, what safety equipment do you take along?
Oh, this is a trick question. What safety equipment do I take along, or what safety equipment should I take along?
Let's go with both.
Because they're not always the same thing. Elaine has really opened my eyes. I haven't gone into buildings that are overly dangerous. Mm-hmm. One of the first things you always take along, though, is a flashlight.
Sure.
You never investigate in bad shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to fall off your heels or stub your toe or flip-flops or something. The Klondike, for example, has some areas where part of the floor has been lifted up, and they're roped off.
Right.
So it's okay, but you need to pay attention. You need to be aware. I think a first aid kit would be very handy no matter what you're doing. And other than that, one of the responsibilities of the pre-investigation, both through the interviews and whoever goes out and does the preliminary interview at the house or at the location should do, is see what else is there. And if you've got big uneven places, you want people maybe where people can fall and sprain an ankle or something. You might even want boots instead of tennis shoes.
Right,
if you've got low-hanging stuff or whatever, you might want a hard hat. Like that.
And it's interesting that you say that because a lot of times when you see like the television shows, you got these guys that are running around in the dark with nothing more than, you know, a green screen on the camera showing them. What a lot of people don't understand about this is that there are members of the crew, production crew, that will actually go to the location and sanitize the place so, you know, Captain Hairdo doesn't fall in a hole and, you know, and can never get out again. Yeah, they have these things. Us, however, in the real world, we don't have production crews to keep us out. So basically, at least keep some kind of a light on so you're not falling into holes and, you know, never coming back again.
It doesn't have to be dark for a ghost to come out.
Exactly. Take, for example, tomorrow I'm going on an investigation at a private home. I've seen the video, and I can't really share it with anybody because these are kind of well-known people and they're friends of the family. So I'm keeping it a very private, very, very private affair. So there will be no, you know, voice recordings. There will be no pictures. I'm just trying to help these people understand what's going on. It is only happening in their son's room, and it only seems to happen during nap time. It rarely is anything that happens at night. So it's like, and we had Steve Parsons on the show, who's a parapsychologist from England. In fact, I'm going to be on his show next week. And he's a really cool cat. I really like this guy. He's an intelligent guy. And the question that he raises is if a spirit shows itself at 3 o'clock in the, or let's say high noon or whatever, why would you go to the place at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Exactly.
It kind of goes against common sense, and he's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, ghosts don't need moonlight to come out, and, you know, that's unfortunately something that has been, you know, force-fed to us through the television shows over the last, you know, 10 or 12 years or so.
I think it's because it makes it scarier.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, and also, you know, I don't know. I think that a green screen would make me look fat. Who knows? But
no, I need to lose that few pounds anyway, so I know it would make me look bad. So.
So now her next question, now this is a really fascinating one, and it's a question that I have, and I think we covered it a little bit earlier. Do you think it is possible for someone who has psychic abilities and is working on fine-tuning them to lose them? If so, how can they get them back?
I think it is possible to lose them. I think a few things can happen, and it's one of the things that can happen during a reading even. So we start working so hard on concentrating and putting our mind at work that we lose the thread of the psychic piece.
Right.
Because for me, the psychic, so much of that is in the mind, but it's not my conscious thought process in creating it.
Right.
And so if we become too... It's part of the whole second guessing too much or trying to intellectually analyze too much. Just because it doesn't make sense to us when it comes to our being shown to us doesn't mean that it doesn't make sense to whoever we need to say it to. So it can happen that way, and we can be so involved in the intellectualization of it and the process that we forget the organic. And until we get back to the organic, it could very well be gone or inaccurate. And as we grow, like we said before, it's very possible that it can just go away or take a break.
Sure.
And things in our lives can make it more difficult, too. We're under a lot of stress, a lot of chaos, a lot of turmoil. It's very distracting. It's going to be much more difficult to really be accurate, at least, as being psychic.
Right. You know, I had somebody ask me this question once before, because I've always been fascinated with Daniel Dunglass Hume. And as we all know, he was a psychic in the Victorian era. And, I mean, like, I'm talking like this dude was the Jedi master of psychics. And you think of people like himself, and you think of people like Eusebio Palladino or Florence Cook, who were the three biggies back in, you know, that era of time. And I've actually had people ask me, it's like, why don't we have psychics like that now? And my answer would be twofold to that. One, we do. They just feel that they're not allowed to let themselves shine. Right. And back in the 19th and early 20th century, we didn't have all the garbage that's floating around in the air around us right now.
Exactly.
The Industrial Revolution hadn't happened yet. Electricity was in its infancy. I mean, I'm talking like newly born kind of infancy. But do you think that that is the case with this, that we do have these people still, but, you know, they're either not welcome, or all the garbage that's hanging out in the air affects that?
I hadn't thought about it before, but I honestly think that you're right, that both pieces are true. There's a lot more chaos in the environment, or in... Oh, I hate so many of the terms. I need a better vocabulary to talk about these things, because
that's some right.
of it just sounds trite and cliche, but no. The field, or whatever it is you want to look at, it can become more difficult to tune in and listen and get rid of all the static, because I think you're right, there's a lot more out there that creates static.
Right.
And we also have very short attention spans now, because of media mostly. And we have so many other things to focus on. When these people were around, they were a huge sensation, partly because they were new and people would go pay see them and all of this. And there weren't as many things to compete with them. And now we have so many other things going on. People don't have to go. And also we're in a much, I don't want to say less superstitious, because in some ways that's not true, but it was an era of a lot of superstition still.
Yeah.
And I think there was more belief in the psychic then than there is now.
Yes, I would definitely would have to agree with that, especially during this was the spiritualism and late spiritualism era. And well, I mean, let's face it, it's still around, but it's not quite as, you know, huge as it was back in the 19th century. But yeah, I definitely think that it's still there, just kind of not really allowed to shine so much.
I know people that have done some amazing things.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've never actually seen a levitation, but that's not to say that I don't think that it can happen or that it can't happen. I just have never seen it, but
I'd like to learn.
Yeah, I mean, you know, levitating would be pretty cool, but being able to fly around like a, you know, like a comic book superhero, are you kidding me? I would be in heaven with that.
Yeah.
I've even got
my passport.
I'll get my cape.
Yeah.
Do you believe that being around water can bring out people's natural psychic abilities? William?
I'm sorry. I'm listening. This is radio, and sitting there with a thoughtful look on my face is probably not the best thing to do. I don't see how it would, unless the water is something that helps soothe and calm a person so that those abilities are allowed to come through. Water is supposed to be a conduit for energy, and a lot of the paranormal that way, and that makes some sense. But I don't know how it would be helpful to the individual psychic as far as their own personal abilities go, except for that calming influence and that kind of that cleansing influence.
Okay. Are people with various abilities drawn to certain places? If so, where are you drawn?
Europe, all over. But yeah, I think so. And actually, there's even astrology that talks about some of that, which I don't know how much I believe or not. But part of it's history. But I'm drawn to places that have a deep connection with power and beings that go back a long time and aren't necessarily human.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not demonic or something else. It's an other that's difficult to explain. Stonehenge was incredible for me, for example. Because there's just something so ancient there and so beautiful there. And, you know, it was sleeping, but it was there.
Yeah.
There are other places like that around where it just really hits.
Yeah. I've never been to Europe. I was born in Germany, but, you know, I came here when I was just like a little dude, and my dad was in the military and my mom went with. I've never actually been there, but I have heard from people who have gone there and have actually had contact with you know, the Fae, fairies, gentry, whatever it is. Sorry, guys, don't, you know, come and get me in the middle of the night. sorry, it's incredibly superstitious, I know, but that's how it's brought up.
No, it's perfectly all right, because there is something there that's very real. And so far, they're nice to me, but I want to keep it that way.
Yeah, and so do I. I don't want to have a leprechaun steal my clothes like it did to my grandfather. what responsibility do you believe psychics, empaths, and such owe to the paranormal community and the world around them?
Oh, geez. We also owe to ourselves, and that's one part of the question that's lacking.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't take care of ourselves, we don't take care of anybody.
Sure.
And part of taking care of ourselves is realizing we can't always be on, and we can't always be giving, and we can't always be putting out there and helping and doing for everybody all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We have a responsibility to be honest, which also includes admitting we're not perfect and when we're wrong. And I kind of know where she's going with some of this as well. If somebody came up to me and said, "Is my child dead?" and I saw that they were, I think my responsibility actually would be to say, I don't know.
Okay.
Because if I'm wrong, that's horrific.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it would be.
And I, not just because of what's come out lately, it's just one of those kinds of things. It's one of the reasons why I don't do much reading with living, but with the dead.
William, do you have anybody there with you right now?
You mean paranormal?
Yeah, because I just heard a voice over from your side.
Oh, I am in my father's house, and the doors are closed, but there is a TV in a room in another room, and
okay,
stuff like that. So that could be it. But
okay,
yeah, I do have somebody with me too. But that's not who you're hearing. I'm sorry. I told them they needed to keep it down.
No, and it's like I heard a man whisper. Cheryl, are you writing in there right now about? Yeah, did you hear that?
I didn't, but my hearing's not very good.
What is it you heard, Rick?
It just sounded like a man whispering. I couldn't make out any like words or whatever, but it was definitely, you know, it was definitely words.
Talked a minute ago, and that would have been it. So if you got something else, and you probably got an EVP from the guy that's sitting behind me.
Okay. Yeah, because we've actually had this happen quite a few times on the show, and it usually happens when we have people that have a considerable amount of psychic ability. That does happen. But, you know, say hi to your friend for me.
Yeah, thank you. My good grandfather hangs out with me a lot. So it's cool.
Cool. Okay. Last and final question, and I think this one is actually pretty funny, but if you were to meet a TV psychic of your choice, who would it be?
That is funny. And you know, the thing is, I don't know many. I haven't watched all that many shows. The only two I really know of are Chip Coffee, who seems fine.
I would totally love to meet that guy, yeah.
Yeah, he seems like a character and everything, but I don't know him. All I know is a little on TV. Mm-hmm. And I've seen about 20 minutes worth of scattered around of Long Island Medium. And those are... Oh, and Michelle...
Bélanger.
Yeah. And actually, I didn't realize that it's her tour that's in Chicago that I took.
Oh.
But they all seem like interesting people. And such, but they're the only ones I really know of right now, and that's just from TV, and I'm always a little skeptical of anything I see on TV.
Yeah, well, I think that's an honest answer. So am I. You know, I tell people that it's like, I'm not a skeptic, I'm just a believer that hasn't closed, hasn't closed their mind, but yeah, I definitely would have to say that I'm extremely skeptical about a lot of the stuff that I see on TV. Even with the ghost hunting shows, I'm very skeptical because I've heard a lot of different things, and I'm not going to call anybody out because it's going to get us into a lot of trouble. But, you know, it does happen, unfortunately. There is a lot of fakery that goes on.
And but, even if the investigators and the psychics are absolutely real and genuine, by the time it goes, you whittle hours and hours and hours of down to 40 minutes for a TV show with producers looking for ratings and revenue, so it's got to be exciting. I mean, who knows? And that's just it. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, that's a fair enough answer. I mean, that's all this field is a bunch of theory, conjecture, and a whole lot of WTFs. But, you know, William, you know, we've come up to that time now at the end of the show where you can do all the shameless self-promotion that you want. And we're all about shameless self-promotion here at Paranormal Underground.
Oh, right. That's part of why I love you guys so much. I've got a lot going on, actually. We've talked about some of it. I've got a Haunted Hotspots class coming up at the famous Sumter B&B on May 18th.
Okay.
I've got my class at the Klondike coming up on June 29th. There's one at the Topland Hotel coming up in September. Usually the third Sunday of the month, I do a class in Oregon City, just a two-hour class for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do more, and I want to do them all over the place. So if you've got a place that has entities, let me know, and you can help me get people there. Awesome. We are going to do a solstice stories and tour on the 21st, I believe it is, of June.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no. Yeah, June.
Okay.
And so that kind of thing going on. And just trying to work on writing projects and stuff. I've got my blog. You can link to it off my website, paranormalinsights.net. And I've updated that recently. The articles I'm so pleased to be able to write for Paranormal Underground magazine, which just came out again,
mm-hmm.
and is an amazing publication. And let's see, I think that's most of what's going on. Soon I'll be at Paracon on Memorial Day weekend, and at Port Gamble, I think it's the 19th of October. And open for more. I love it.
Great. Well, perfect. Well, thank you so much, William Becker, for joining us once again. And I hope, and I'm sure we will have you back again in the future, because I got a feeling that there's a lot of great things coming up in your future. So thank you so much again for joining us. It's been a fascinating conversation and fun as usual. So thank you.
You're welcome, Rick. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye. Have a good night.
Thank you.
So, Cheryl, this is the time of the show that we bring you on.
Hey.
Hey,
thanks.
So what do we got going on? I know that the May issue came out a couple days ago.
It did. It did. It's online at paranormalunderground.net. And also want to thank William for joining us tonight. He's always fascinating to listen to.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate it. And I love to hear his perspective on things. And that being said, his column in the magazine is fascinating each month. It's one of my favorites, really, because it's called Inside the Psychic Mind. And he does a lot of what he did just tonight. He gives some great perspective on what it's like to be psychic and what that means and what it's like and you know, different experiences that that make me marvel. And so a lot of times I'll read his column and I'll laugh or I'll cry or I'll giggle. I don't know. You know, it's yeah. One of those things that just brings out these different emotions. I just love it. But anyway, that being said, we have a new magazine online. It is full of good stuff, and I'm trying to bring up the lineup right now, but our site seems to be a little slow. It's May 2013, and on the cover we have a photo of Hans Holzer, the late Hans Holzer, with his daughter Alexandra. And you had the opportunity to interview Alexandra about how she's carrying on the research for her father. And yeah. It's a really great question and answer article. And I think when people read it, they can get an insight into, you know, a little bit about Hans Holzer himself and then why Alexandra feels compelled to carry on what he started. So sure. I really think you did a good job with those questions. And,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, I think you got some great responses and information from Alexandra. And it's kind of special because this year marks the 50th anniversary of Hans Holzer's first book called Ghost Hunter.
Yep, and I remember taking that book out of the Chicago Public Library when I was like 9 years old and reading it and thinking to myself, it's like, wow, I want to be this guy.
I have a feeling a lot of people have checked out that book.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely think so. We also have a great article from Katie from NEPA, Katie Christopher, on crop circle conspiracy theories, and I think it's really interesting. She has when did she start her column? Like a few months ago. It's rather new, and she's really looked at some interesting things, and the thing that I like about Katie's articles is she usually brings up things that I haven't thought of, and that I really hadn't heard of, and so I think that that's really good discussion to have.
And that's what's great about this, about Paranormal Underground. We do have a lot of great writers, and they do bring up some very thought-provoking things.
Yeah. I'll have to say that our very own Rick Hale here has about 4 articles in this issue, in addition to, you know, your spotlight.
Better recognize.
Your spotlight with Alexandra. You also wrote about a haunted history article on the amazing Daniel Douglas Hume.
Yeah, it's actually pronounced Hume. I'm sorry, but always been he's always been really, really fascinating to me, and I just the level of ability that he showed, and he wasn't one of those, you know, spiritualist mediums back in the spiritualists that, you know, sat in a dark room and, you know, did things that were, you know, obviously that were obvious fakery. No, he sat in very well lit rooms and was still able to produce you know, things that these people were faking in the dark. And I'm not suggesting that he was faking. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm just saying is that he produced the real thing.
Well, I hadn't really heard about him before, and so you educated me in someone who is very intriguing, mysterious, and controversial. So thank you for that one. Also, your article in our haunted hospitality column on the Country House in, what is it, Clarendon Hills, Illinois.
Yeah, it's south of Chicago.
Okay, yeah, that was a good one. I really like learning about these. This one was a restaurant, if I remember correctly, not a hotel, but a restaurant.
Correct.
And it's just interesting to hear about how these establishments that have been around for a while, you know, they may change ownership, they may go out of business and come back, but that activity just still seems to carry on. And it's just interesting to hear about how the old staff maybe had an encounter and then the new staff had, you know, some of the same stuff happening.
Right, which brings validity to the, you know, to the whole idea that there is something actually there and it's making its presence very well known.
Exactly. Oh, also before we go, we have some great columns from Michaela, a.k.a. known as Silver Moon Medicine. She wrote more in-depth information about crystals and gemstones in this issue, as well as about dark workers, which has some mystery surrounding it. But on our last show, she was on last week, she really did a good job of defining, you know, what dark workers are and really kind of smashing some of those misconceptions about dark workers. So, it's a good article, and I recommend it. All of our writers are great. We have so many good, I can't even cover them all. We have demonologist Jerry Williams, who wrote this month on Ouija board spirit boxes and paranormal ghost hunting, and really the dangers of communicating through these devices. And, you know, Ouija boards, I mean, in a way, I think they kind of get a bad rap, because to me, they are no different than spirit boxes or anything else you use to communicate with. They're a way to communicate, and they should all be taken seriously.
Right, correct.
So, anyway, I just encourage people to go check it out. It's $1.99 to download a single issue, or you can get 12 months for $19.99. They will be emailed automatically to your email inbox, the PDF of each issue. You don't have to do anything if you sign up for that one. And so we're always looking for feedback. So please, if you take a look at the magazine, give us your feedback. What did you like? What was not there that you wanted to see? And so, yeah, check it out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. So, you know, before we go, who do we have coming up next week?
Next week, and Karen, if she were here, she'd be squealing like a little girl, all happy and giddy. We are going to be talking to Raymond A. Moody. He is the best-selling author of 11 books. He's most famous as an author of books about life after death, reincarnation, near-death experience. He is actually the person who coined the phrase, near-death experience in his book, Life After Life, which was originally published in 1975. He's a true pioneer in the field, and I'm so excited to have him on. So please join us next week, and I think we're going to have some great discussion.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking that I am going to, I may pop in every once in a while, but I definitely want, you know, Karen to have her her time talking to this guy, because she's a huge fan, and you know, and he's a very respectable individual.
Well, I will give you a little hint. If I hadn't already promoted her article in the May issue, Karen does our top 10 paranormal list every month, and in fact, this month's list is about the top 10 paranormal books that influenced her life, and number one was a book by Raymond Moody. So she indeed has been influenced by Raymond Moody, and I know that it's a opportunity of a lifetime for her, so I know she's really excited, as am I.
Yeah. So. All right, well, I guess that is going to wrap it for tonight. You know, thank you so much to William Becker for joining us. Thank you, everybody who listens to the show and in the chat room. You know, it's always, we love our listeners, and thank you for listening. Yes. Coming up next is going to be DJ Onyx, correct?
I believe so.
Okay, great. Yeah. So if you like techno and trance, which I, you know, do, I like trance, you know, stick around and listen to DJ Onyx, and he's going to, you know, spin you some jams. So cool. Hang out, and thank you everybody for listening, and have a good week.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor at paranormalunderground.net. Until next time, keep exploring the unexplained at paranormalunderground.net. Please join us next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network.